Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 95, CJ Evolution. Very excited to have the next guest on the show. Her name is Heather McDonald. If you don't know who she is the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor of City Journal, where she reports on crime, culture, race, and education. She is the author of Are Cops Racist and The War on Cops. Congress has asked her to testify on sentencing reform, policing, immigration, and she is frequently invited on Fox News, CNN, and other TV and radio programs. Heather, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate it.
What prompted you to start writing about these serious issues facing law enforcement?
Well, I saw a false narrative that had taken over our national discourse that was resulting in lives being lost to emboldened criminals. Mm-hmm. And I have heard from too many law-abiding residents of high-crime areas that they are desperate for the police. They support the police. And the Black Lives Matter narrative has silenced them and mm-hmm. has resulted in their encounter with an ever higher degree of criminality. And so for me, it's really a moral crusade, both for those law-abiding residents and also on behalf of the cops who are so unfairly vilified these days.
I agree. And folks, if you need to go out and pick up her book, The War on Cops. Now, in your book, Heather, you talk about the Ferguson effect. Can you explain that to the listeners?
Yes, the Ferguson effect, Patrick, is the double phenomenon of officers backing off of a type of policing known as proactive policing and the resulting crime increase as criminals become emboldened. Mm-hmm. The Black Lives Matter narrative, as well as virtually the entirety of criminology and academia and the mainstream media, have been telling the cops for the last two decades, really, that they are racist for engaging in certain types of discretionary policing activities in high crime areas, things like pedestrian stops, otherwise mm-hmm. known as stop, question, and frisk, low-level enforcement. And officers, thanks to the Black Lives Matter narrative today, when they get out of their cars to make one of those pedestrian stops, are routinely surrounded by hostile, jeering crowds, cursing at them, sometimes throwing things at them, refusing their lawful requests. The tensions are extremely high, and the hatred directed at them, as a Chicago cop told me last June, he said he's never encountered so much hatred in his 19 years on the job, is almost unprecedented. Mm-hmm. So officers are reluctant now, faced with both the message that they're racist for doing this sorts of discretionary policing, faced with the hostility, and faced with the fear that if a encounter with a civilian ends up in the use of force and it's caught on YouTube, and that YouTube video does not include the full sequence that led the officer to use force, they could end up as CNN's latest racist cop of the week and have their careers in jeopardy. So as a result, officers are backing off of that mm-hmm. type of policing. They are staying in their cars. They're driving on by the guys hanging out at 1 a.m. on a known drug corner, you know, for no reason whatsoever, been there for half an hour, hitching up their waistband as if they have the gun. They're driving on by, just waiting for the next 911 call to come over their radio. And as a result, crime in inner city areas is shooting through the roof. In 2015, mm-hmm. the nation saw the single largest one-year increase in homicides in nearly 50 years, 12%, and in cities with large Black populations, that one-year increase in homicide was much larger. It was 54% in Washington, D.C., 73% in Milwaukee, and a whopping 90% in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, Heather, I mean, this is great for the criminals, but it really is a disservice to honest citizens out there who want the police to do their job, and now they're restrained from doing so.
The voice that sticks with me the most, Patrick, is a elderly cancer amputee in the Mount Hope section of the Bronx, Mrs. Sweeper, who said to me, please, Jesus, send more police. Because the only time she feels safe to go into her building lobby to get her mail is when she sees the cops, because it's otherwise colonized by trespassing youth hanging out, smoking weed, and selling drugs. And she said the only peaceful summer she had was when the police had erected a watchtower on the corner outside where she lives because it discouraged the gang shootings. Now, the left would see that police watchtower and say, oh, this racist, oppressive surveillance state. The people that live with open-air drug markets, that live with these insane gang-related drive-by shootings, have a very different opinion of the police.
And I've always believed, Heather, and I know you talk about this in your book, I have always believed that the former administration contributed to the growing anti-police sentiment that grew from Ferguson and is still prevalent today.
Oh, it is absolutely the major player.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama took every opportunity to reinforce this false narrative that policing is endemically racist and that we're living through an epidemic of racially biased shootings of black men. Three hours before the assassination of five cops in Dallas in July last summer by a Black Lives Matter inspired assassin who set out to kill whites and white cops in particular, President Obama saw fit to take time out from a delegation to Poland to reiterate his usual theme about racist cops.
Mm-hmm.
But even after that shooting, assassinations, at the memorial service for those five slain Dallas officers, President Obama had the gall to say in his remarks that black parents are right to fear that their child could be killed by a cop every time they go out on the street just for doing something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
The facts completely rebut that. But President Obama, he invited Black Lives Matter activists several times to the White House, and he absolutely gave them credibility beyond even what the New York Times or CNN can confer.
And the thing that amazes me, Heather, and is, you know, especially in the wake of Michael Brown, even after all the facts were in, you know, hands up, don't shoot, that was blown out of the water by Obama's DOJ, headed up by Eric Holder. Even after all these facts come to light and the evidence is out there, which proves that Darren Wilson was in the right, why do people still have this attitude? It just amazes me.
Well, people are very wedded to the racial victimology in our culture. We've been having a discussion about phantom police racism for the last two decades in order not to talk about a far more difficult and uncomfortable truth, which is just exponentially elevated levels of black crime.
Mm-hmm.
Policing today is simply a function of crime. Policing is data driven. It goes to where people are most being victimized, and that's in black neighborhoods. But nobody wants to talk about the fact that blacks die of homicide at six times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined, not because they're being shot by white people or the cops, but because they're being shot by blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks commit homicide at eight times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined. And if you take Hispanics out of that equation, you have a black-white homicide differential of about 11 to 1. But that is a truth that most Americans want to turn their eyes away from.
And you state in your book, Heather, and I agree with you, that police misconduct is deplorable. It needs to be eradicated. I agree 100%. And you know and I know, Heather, that there are some bad cops out there. But the media paints, and you already hit on a little bit, the media paints a picture that the police are the enemy to the African-American community. And is that right? I mean, you hit on it a little
bit. No, absolutely not. There's you know, in New York City alone, over 10,000 minority males are alive today who would have likely died, who would have died of homicide had homicide levels remained at their early 1990s levels. There's nothing that has had as powerful effect on black neighborhoods in New York City in providing jobs, economic transformation, freedom from fear as the proactive policing revolution that began in the city in 1994 under Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. Mm-hmm. So, again, you know, the people that are out there screaming F you to the cops are not representative. There's lots of people who show up at police community meetings, mm-hmm. and like a woman in the 41st Precinct in the Bronx, South Bronx, who just spontaneously burst out at one meeting I attended, "How lovely when we see the police. They are my friends." Those people never get heard.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do anybody any good when I think the mayor of New York City, de Blasio, put some restrictions on stop and frisk, Terry stops.
Right. New York is the one place that, with the Ferguson effect, with officers backing off of proactive policing, has not had a very, very sharp increase in shootings. And it's due to two things. We've got such a massive police force here that we can use simple command presence, that is just having officers stand around in shooting hot spots rather than actually making stops and questioning people. But we also have a very powerful gentrification that's at work now that is transforming neighborhoods.
Now, I know broken windows theory began back east. Is it going out the door? Is it leaving?
Well, it is certainly under assault. And you have places like Chicago and Baltimore that are proudly saying, oh, we are focusing only on violent crimes now. We're not doing the low-level misdemeanor enforcement. This gets it just backwards. The way to get at violent criminals is to take care of public disorder, because violent criminals do not scrupulously obey low-level laws. And it's also, broken windows policing is a moral imperative, because it's what people in those high disorder neighborhoods want. But the pressure against cops, there's not a single law enforcement activity that is not under assault today for having a racially disproportionate impact on blacks, because sadly minorities commit offenses at higher rates across the board. And so all that low-level public order enforcement is also being attacked. So it's very hard, and cops are facing so much hostility in the streets, as I say, that they are simply reluctant to undertake voluntary interactions. They're mandated to respond to 911 calls, but they don't have to issue a trespassing or an arrest. And the federal consent decree that Jeff Sessions, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to his enormous credit, mm-hmm. tried to reopen and reconsider in Baltimore, that was signed in the waning days of the Obama Justice Department, actually prevents officers from making trespassing and loitering arrests on their own recognizance. If they themselves observe the offender, they have to wait for somebody to call in with a complaint about that particular individual, which is an effort to try and mm-hmm. completely end broken windows policing.
And I always say, and it always starts from the top, and it just reverberates down. So whatever the tone is on top, and we've talked about that with the prior administration, they set the tone, and it just reverberated, and it just caught fire, and it just spread.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Unfortunately, our brave men and women out there who are wearing uniforms mm-hmm. have to deal with this on a daily basis. I mean, do you think, Heather, do you think it would be improved? Do you think going down the road or looking down the road, relationships between law enforcement and the community can get better?
Yes, I think they can. But, you know, we're facing now the academy is just pumping out racial hatred mm-hmm. on a regular basis. And that's very hard to overcome. It's going to matter that we've got somebody in the White House now who is not echoing the Black Lives Matter narrative. But, you know, he's not doing something. Trump should be out there giving speeches. And if he really wants to be bold and courageous, he would inform the public about the reality of crime mm-hmm. and explain why officers are in high crime areas and minority neighborhoods. It's because they're trying to protect lives, but that's where the crime is at just astronomical rates. But when Trump tried to speak about that during the election, and he rightly talked about Chicago and the fact that last year somebody was shot every 2 hours in Chicago, 4,300 shooting victims. Can you imagine if those were 4,300 white victims?
Yeah.
They're all black. 4,300 white victims, the media would go nuts. Mm-hmm. But however left-wing the media is, it really doesn't care about black lives until they're shot by a police officer.
Exactly.
Anyway, when Trump tried to talk about that, he was accused of being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's a bizarre turn of events.
Well, and it's just, you know, it's just the false narrative out there like we've talked about.
Yeah.
It, you know, and it actually scares me because my daughter's moving out to Chicago. I'm not saying anything bad about Chicago, but Chicago does have a high crime rate. And, yeah, it's just amazing. Heather, I know you're busy. I know you got to run. If people want to reach out to you, where can they find you on social media?
Well, actually, I don't do social media.
Oh, okay.
I think the Manhattan Institute has a Twitter handle that is supposed to be setting out all my writing. I don't know how. I've never looked at it. I don't know how well stocked it is. But I think also on the Manhattan Institute website, on my bio, I think maybe they have most of my articles there.
Okay.
But certainly the book is available everywhere.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate it. The book is amazing. I'm almost done with it, and you got to go check out this book because Heather really is a voice for police officers everywhere out there. So, Heather, I know you got to run. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Please take care, and thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.